We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the podcast. We just watched the New Orleans Pelicans demolish the Chicago Bulls, who are a top-tier NBA team this year. So that felt great. Did it feel great to you, Mike?
We got revenge. We went into their building after they came into ours, and we walked away with a much-needed victory.
Yes, 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 we did. So, we have a bunch of different games to talk about this that we've seen. Three preseason games now. There's an open practice. We've seen Cousins and Davis playing off of one another. First thing, that, as always, we need to talk to when we're on a Pelicans podcast is injuries.
Of course.
So, our good buddy Rajon Rondo, who I talked all kinds of smack about previously, he's out for a month. So why am I sad? If I talk all this smack about him, why am I sad, Mike?
Yeah, well, I mean, just to be clear, it's not definite yet. It's likely, but then again, the Pelicans expect a guy to be out for a month. He's probably out for a year, or he'll be back on Tuesday. But I think it's because, well, essentially you're down two starters before the season even starts, which, yeah, they're not your most important starters, but like the main thing that you want to build is cohesion. You want to put guys in roles. You want to, you know, just have some semblance of what your team is going to be moving forward. And you can't even get to game one. And this is just year after year, like the projected, it'd be hard pressed, probably 2008, 2009, where we started a season with the projected starting lineup. And it's not just starting the season, but like you wanted the guys to get through camp healthy. I mean, this is actually going to be their longest stretch of practices, between now and the first game. So it would have been great for them just to practice a week straight and work on everything. But of course, you can't have that. You're going to have to maybe have Rondo come back 4 or 5 weeks into the season and try to reincorporate him and change things around, because there's no way they're going to play the same without him that they'll want to play with him. So it's just, it's so frustrating. And you just wonder like what this franchise did to deserve this, because it's every year. And outside of maybe Philly, I don't see this happening to other teams. Like, can you name a team that's down two starters before game one even starts, and not guys that are carrying over injuries like Isaiah Thomas is with Cleveland, but guys who freshly got injured, you know, in the offseason or in preseason. Like, that just doesn't happen to anybody except for the Pelicans.
No, I mean, like, even Blake Griffin has come back and he's going to be ready to start the season. After supposedly he wasn't going to be around until December. So, but other teams get good news.
I was
actually sitting there trying to think, like, the last team I would have considered snake bit like this. And I don't know, would it have been the Brandon Roy Greg Oden Blazers, maybe?
But it wasn't, like, those were specific guys, and it wasn't, like, everybody. I would say it was the Hornets. I mean, it was always something, whether it was Mashburn with vertigo or Bobby Phills dying in a random car accident like that. It's just this overall franchise. It blows me away, but it's not because there's a huge downgrade from Rondo to whoever fills in. Tonight it was Moore. It might be Clark. We might see, I mean, the guard positions are pretty good. You know, going from Rondo to whoever's going to get those minutes in and of itself isn't a downgrade. It's the fact that Drew is now going to have to play more point guard when the whole reason they made Rondo their focus was so Drew could play more off ball. And, you know, and then, like I said, at best you try to reincorporate Rondo 20 games into the season when you're already kind of going along. And that's the frustrating part to me, and the part that would mess you up is that, you know, it's just going to have to be a different style. I mean, how much different do you think this team plays with Rondo getting 30 minutes a game versus whatever they're going to have to do now offensively?
I think it's significantly different, and the primary reason why is Rondo was actually capable of getting into the middle of the defense. Like, and I don't say so you won't see Rondo blitz the rim and get a layup. Like, that's not Rondo. But Rondo is really good at navigating the top section of a pick and roll, and he can get into the middle, into the mid paint area, and he can probe and move around and find people open. Like, we saw this in the first Chicago game. We saw this happen, you know, for a couple of minutes in the Thunder game. He's actually capable of breaking that very first line of defense. And if he's rolling, has a big rolling who's deadly, it's been Davis frequently, but also Cousins. He can find the right person, and I can't claim anybody else on this team does that properly. Juan Moore does not have the cleverness with the ball to be able to get past that first line very frequently. A couple other guys have the ability to get past that first line, but they're going to not be able to really find the right player. Clark is probably the best bet I've seen so far at that. I kind of wonder what's happening with Crawford, other than he's missing every shot he's taking. But like, that's my real worry, is the whole point is to have Drew and Rondo break that first line of defense, have one of them available to do that, and they're not able to do that really anymore unless Drew has the ball in his hands, and even he isn't the most brilliant at doing that around. So, how's that for depressing?
Is there any possibility that it has little impact, or maybe goes the other way? So a big thing, if you're being critical of Rondo, was that he's not really that engaged in the regular season. He doesn't really get pumped up until big games or the playoffs. Is there any way that would have been the case again during the season? And maybe now you have a bunch of other guys who are a little hungrier, who step up, play well, and then when Rondo comes back, he's joining a team that's already playing well, and he's excited and ready to go and super engaged. I mean, is there any way that this could somehow be a neutral or a positive long term?
So here's what I would say is, yes, it could be, but only on the defensive end. And I mean, I have a real hard time drawing any real Rondo impressions of what he would be for the Pelicans from just, you know, two games of preseason. But what I saw of him defensively is he didn't give a crap. He was not getting out. He was not trying to actually anticipate where a guy was going when they had the ball in their hands. He wasn't trying that hard defensively. And yes, it's preseason, so he probably intended not to try very hard. But that's the Rondo we've seen many, many times in the past as well. Like what we saw tonight is, you know, we saw Clark trying hard on defense. We saw Etuan Moore, always he tries hard on defense. These guys aren't the most athletic, the most physically capable guys in the world, but they are going to at least try really hard to do all the right things. So that's, I mean, that could probably balance it out. I mean, we still have Cousins and Davis and Holiday offensively. And if you can't manufacture a pretty damn good offense with those three guys, then you don't deserve to have a coaching job in the NBA.
And then the other question I'll ask is, for like the fifth year in a row, before the season even starts, the Pelicans will now be able to apply for the hardship exception.
Are you excited about that?
Yeah, Ashik, Frank Jackson.
You think Nate Robinson's available?
Solomon Hill and now Rondo all will be out, you know, at least 2 weeks, which is, you know, four players, and you could qualify for the hardship. Would you be looking into bring in a vet type, or would you just give that spot to, like, you know, a Cook or a Jalen Jones or, you know, one of these guys who have two-way contracts, or just not do anything else and just kind of ride with what you got?
Honestly, I would just ride with what they've got right now. If you, unless they have somebody who's on the call, on the phone, ready to go tomorrow, which I guess it's a lot of the guys who are the D-League, they're waiting for that call and they'll be on a new damn plane you want them to be on tomorrow. But it's just really hard. Like this team, we want it to start meshing, and why bring in another person who, let's be honest, the people we brought in on hardship, whatever the word is, all of a sudden I'm having a mind blank. Hardship. Exceptions. That's the word. Exception. like, do they even really play much?
Like, I mean, Ish Smith played a lot, but yeah.
He wasn't brought in as a hardship exception, though.
I mean, basically.
All right.
I mean, basically, remember they let Bryce DeJean go, and then they picked up Ish and Nate Robinson, but it doesn't matter. I mean, so, but what does that matter? What does the past matter? Right now, there's guys out there still on the free agent market that can play basketball. I mean, if you just look at point guard, you got guys like Beno Udra, you got Darren Williams, you got Trey Burke, you got
Norris Cole.
You've got Norris Cole, you got CJ Watson. Or you can go the other way and be like, ah, we got enough guards, and now we'll play Tony Allen exclusively at guard, and let's go pick up Mike Dunleavy Jr. or Derek Williams. Like, there's guys out there who could play and give you minutes if you had to, that you'd rather give it to them over Charles Cook or Jalen Jones. So I don't know. It's something that personally, if I could get Beno Udra, I would get him. I don't know. Nobody else would really excite me, but like a real point guard who could steady and run an offense for a couple minutes in a game, because I didn't see that at all tonight. Like when Drew was in, it wasn't great, but at least it was okay. You know, I feel somewhat comfortable. When Drew was out and we had like Moore bringing up the floor or Clark trying to penetrate the defense or what, like it got ugly in stretches. And you could only run through Boogie so much. And, you know, some of the how many dribble handoffs did you see tonight that weren't even completed and led to a turnover and a bucket the other way against freaking Chicago? Like, they can't even do simple things like dribble handoffs or the other team. Like, a guy like Moore is coming off a pick or coming off a rub, and the guy's, like, right on his hip because nobody respects any of our guys to be able to backdoor cut and actually finish. Like, you could try to run it through Boogie and AD, but the other guys have so few things that the opposing team respects that I don't know if they're going to be able to do anything anyway.
Yeah, I was going to bring up more. In the third quarter, he was getting snuffed by Denzel Valentine. He couldn't get past Denzel Valentine off of a pick. If you don't know, people, the wonderful scouting report on Denzel Valentine was that he had all of the smarts and shooting ability in the world, and his athleticism was so far below par that he went like in the mid round. This is not a guy who should be able to just shut you down, and Moore was having to pick up his dribble when that guy was guarding him. So it's disturbing if Moore is going to be the answer. Clark was a little bit better, but not a lot better. And it gets pretty thin after that as to who our options are. I guess Cousins could be our backup point guard.
Or Beno Udrah.
You've always had a hard-on for Udrah, though.
I do. Like, I respect guys who are going to come in and run an offense like a professional, who aren't going to, you know, mess up. Like, there was just parts in that game tonight where I was questioning whether they were going to be able to get the ball. Like, would you have any fear that Beno wouldn't be able to make a post-entry pass or, you know, wouldn't get 80 or cut? Like, he's just a professional point guard. And, like, there is not one of those on this roster, Drew included. Like, I wouldn't trust Drew to set up an offense, get guys in the right spot, make a great entry pass, come off a dribble handoff and, you know, penetrate and make a good decision. I mean, the best passes tonight by far were made by Boogie. Yeah. He made some cross-court passes and he had some looks. I mean, he makes some low percentage dumb ones too that he tries to force in there. But he was by far our best passer tonight. And you could do something with that, but you could only go so far, especially like the reason it works in Denver is because they have wings that could finish. So teams don't play up on them so hard because they're terrified they're going to go back door and finish on them. So then they have some space to go each way. Our guys like are no threat to do anything but occasionally hit a wide open jumper. Like, they're not even guys you have to run out on super hard because they're not going to be able to put the ball on the floor and get past you and finish at the rim or a mid-range jumper. Like, you can't just say, well, Jokic could pass and Boogie could pass, so therefore we could run it like Denver did through Jokic. Yeah, Jokic had weapons that other teams were afraid of on the wing. That is not the case at all with what the Pelicans have. So I would go get Udrah, and I would probably end up playing him a good 12 to 20 minutes a game. I think he'd pick up the system incredibly fast. He'd be able to get 3, 4, 5 practices in. So I really hope that after they get the diagnosis, if Rondo's going to be out for more than 2 weeks, they go and get somebody who's an actual professional that could play the point guard position.
All right. Let me just throw some point guards at you. And you tell me yes or no. These are the top available point guards still out there. And I had forgotten that he wasn't signed by anyone. Deron Williams is still out there. Do you think he would even come to the Pelicans, or do you think he's looking for another, like, Cleveland shot where he's looking for a contender who he could go join? Or do you think his career is so shot that he just goes anywhere?
Yeah, see, that's the issue is that, like, if we're saying – if this is a hardship exception, then basically – you know, it might just be 3, 4, 5 weeks, and I don't think Deron Williams is doing that unless it's like to audition for an eventual contender. But even then, he's taking a risk. Then what if the Pelicans have another injury or something, and they just wind up keeping Williams for the whole season, and then he doesn't get to go to that contender? So I wonder how many guys, you know, a guy who's desperate to be in the league and has no chance of getting picked up, like, you know, they'll definitely come. But I wonder if guys like Udrah, if guys like Deron Williams, if guys like Dunleavy would come. But if Deron Williams came, I wouldn't. He doesn't have the skill set specifically that I would want. So, no, I would actually say no to Deron Williams.
Okay. Trey Burke.
This is the one that I'm afraid Dell is going to do. And to be fair, OKC wanted to sign him. So an organization with a talent evaluation that people trust, you know, had some interest. I can't do it. I would rather give the minutes to Ian Clark. Trey Burke, his problem was his explosion. I don't think he's going to get into the paint. So, no, thank you.
C.J. Watson.
Well, again, that's another hard no.
Yeah, I was kind of the same way with C.J. I was actually excited by the idea of C.J. until I went and looked at how bad he's been the last couple seasons. He's been really awful. And I kind of remembered him as a solid backup point guard, so, yeah. This is my boy, Grievous Vasquez.
No.
You don't want Vasquez back?
I don't even know if he's capable of playing.
He knows how to pass. He can pass.
He could back in the day. I don't think he can anymore.
Tony Douglas.
No.
No. All right, well, you've just got through all the guys who were not stupid. I mean.
Yeah, for me it would be Bino, or I would use it, like I said, on Mike Dunleavy or even a Derek Williams. Just another guy that I could play on the wing or the 3-4. Like, if Cunningham's terrible like he was tonight, I take him out and give Derek Williams a shot in the second half, give him a couple looks, see if he's on. Like, it for me, it's Bino Udra or a wing. But if you get that exception, I don't see the point of not using it, and neither Cook or Jalen Jones has impressed me enough to where I would say, you know, okay, let's give them a spot. I'd rather use their two-way spot, and I'd rather use their two-way spots, let them play in the G League, and then sign a guy who, if I had to play, you know, a veteran type, who if I had to play 10 minutes in a random game because of foul trouble or whatever, I would have some confidence in. I think the dream scenario would be to do like an Ajinsa 2-for-1 trade with a guy with a non-guaranteed full-year contract and do something like that. I don't think that's happening, but it's so stupid. Like, how many times can a team have the hardship exception to start the season? Like, they already have 4 injuries. Like, it's just so stupid. But anyway, no more use complaining about it. That is what I would do.
Yeah. I bet we could trade for Dante Exum.
Yeah, he should have been a Pelican. I don't know how he's avoided it.
Right.
He's like, prototypical Pelican.
You saw he's likely to miss the rest of the season, right?
Of course, yeah. No, he's a dream Pelican.
He would have been perfect for us.
Yeah, no, he should have done that here. All right, but I mean, it's the latest news, so it's something that is frustrating. But as you said, you still have Holiday, you still have Cousins, you still have Davis. The other thing I'll say is I still think this roster is better right now than the team that we saw in March, really starting to turn it on, and in some cases dominate some teams. So, you know, is it something where they're just going to have to play a slightly different way, but they could be as good? Or I guess I'll ask this. Who now, and you can name two guys, who becomes the biggest X factors? If you assume that we're going to get greatness from Cousins and AD, and then occasional greatness with spots of averageness from Drew, who becomes the biggest X factors now in your mind?
Wow. Clark, probably. And maybe Miller.
And Clark tonight, by far, and again, we're not going to use this as a be-all and all, but by far the leader in plus-minus tonight at plus 21. I don't love talking about the box score. What I saw in the game, active hands, deflecting the ball a lot, you know, making smart reads on help defense, did end up with 7 assists, 4 steals. Like, I've always been an Ian Clark fan, so I agree. He's one that I think will be a big deal.
Yeah, here's what I would say about Clark. I noticed I kept getting annoyed because he would foul people, but then I would flip back and replay the play. And the thing was, is he was always in the right spot. He had always made the right rotation, and he was trying to make a play because he was, you know, it was a rotation where we were scrambling. And what's promising is he's always in the right spot. If you go back and you watch any game 2 years ago and Eric Gordon is on the floor, he's just not on the right spot. He'd be off in the corner, you know, making an angry face at something. So it was very comforting that even when I had like a couple plays where I'm like, why are you fouling that guy? Like, I was like, oh, it's because you had to scramble and cover for this person and you were actually making the right rotation and you just went up against a guy who's 6 inches taller than you and probably has 60 pounds on you. So I did really appreciate that with Clark. And he was also him and Tony Allen were the only guys I saw, other than Drew. Drew's still pretty good at this, who were making really hard cuts to the basket. Those were my observations on Clark that I kind of enjoyed. I will say, as a lead ball handler, he didn't struggle as much as Moore, but he did struggle a little bit trying to be able to get off those pick and rolls and get into space. So.
Yeah, and you mentioned the other guy who I think would be a big X factor. So remember, one of my premises was that you can't really play Rondo and Allen together. And with Rondo gone now, I think that could open up some minutes for Allen. I think, you know, he's definitely going to get more than Crawford. You know, if Moore has to start, he might be, you know, him and it might be him and Clark a bunch off the bench. And I just think Allen, obviously he's going to be tenacious on D, but you're right. He was really cutting today. He was close on a couple of offensive rebound possibilities. And I think he could bring that, to the team. So I really think that Allen becomes a much bigger X factor now, because I just don't know how much he was going to play with the glut of guards that this team had and Rondo being on the floor. But with Rondo being off, I think that opens up more minutes from Allen, because he's probably the only non-shooter now in the rotation. Like, not everybody's a great shooter, but everybody else has to be respected for their position. Now with him being pretty much the only non-shooter, I think he's going to get more minutes, and how he plays could be a huge X factor for this team.
Yeah, Tony Allen's fun. I especially loved his complete and utter air ball that he was forced to take at the beginning, right before the half. I was like, it's like, yay, we got an open jumper for Tony Allen.
Yeah. And then Etuan looks at him like, what are you, like, you passed him the ball. What do you want me to do? But yeah, he had a nice cut off of a Boogie double team, and Boogie found him for a layup. He ran the court. So I think that's going to be big. I would say Dante, but Dante is just going to give you what he gives you. And you're going to say he has a bad game on nights where he misses the open threes, and he has a good game where he hits them, but he's not going to do anything else. So it really is all going to come down to that. Tonight he went 0 for 3. Some other nights he'll go 3 for 3 and you'll be like, oh, that was our X factor. But it's just completely random, and he's going to give you little to nothing else. People will talk about the chase down blocks, but he is the worst help defender. And Cousins will run out at somebody or pick up somebody else's guy, and Dante should be dropping down to pick up cut, and like, he never does it. If you ever want to see somebody get an easy basket, I guarantee pause it and look up, and Dante will be standing right next to that guy a half step slow because he didn't drop down on the rotation. So, I don't expect it to be Dante. I agree with you. Ian Clark and Tony Allen are going to be huge X factors over this month or however long Rondo's out.
So I almost had a bitter tweet earlier in the week about Dante, but I was like, okay, it's small sample size. He's only played 2 preseason games, so this is just me being unfair. But you realize that he has now played 57 minutes across 3 games. Do you know how many rebounds he has collected in those 57 minutes of preseason?
I'm going to guess 3.
That's exactly right. 3 really? Total. Not 3 per game. 3 total.
Yeah, and he's playing small forward, which he should be big for that position.
Yes, he's 6'8".
Yeah.
How do you, like, Etuan Moore had 9 tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, he can't even look into it. Yeah, I don't have an answer.
Although, yeah. Hey, when was the last time you saw 24 rebounds from our front line guys? I guess it'd have to be back to maybe David West and Tyson Chandler when Tyson Chandler got 22 or something.
Yeah, David West, soft ass.
Wow.
I feel like I'm the only David West and 42 will kill me. He's probably my least favorite player as far as the good ones in franchise history.
Really?
I still don't get why people like him. He never moved his feet on defense and just reached, had that whiny face, and like, yeah, I'm just not a fan. Yeah.
I didn't like think he was the best thing on the planet, but he had moments where I enjoyed David West a lot. So.
Yeah, he was just so, I guess it's one of those things where like you see a B and you realize they could be an A if they just did this, and you get more mad at them than the F who you just accept as an F and you laugh at. But anyway,
let's break away from the sad, depressing parts of our roster, which is everything that's not the Twin Towers. Now let's just talk about the Twin Towers for a second here. These 3 games that you've watched, do you feel like they are already in a better place? Do you think that they're playing off of each other better than they were last year? Are you thinking they're just going to wreck the league when they're on the court together?
I still don't feel like they're a tandem. What I feel like they are is 48 minutes of an elite player on the court at all times at a big position. And then they play together probably, what would you say? I mean, they're probably going to play together something like 16 minutes a game, probably not even. Something like that. And I don't feel like when they're on the court together, like they're playing off each other or they're really helping each other or like one gets double teamed and the other cuts or finishes, like, It just feels like they're two guys who happen to be on the court together, but there's no real chemistry. But where the real benefit is that one of them is going to be on the court all 48 minutes. So you have a superstar focal point for all 48 minutes of the game. Do you feel like they're really helping each other in any way or benefiting each other when you see them play together?
So, yes, but not directly. So, I don't even expect them to be doing like big pick and rolls where Cousin has the ball and Davis sets the pick. That doesn't even make sense necessarily to do that sort of thing, because you're just bringing another big to the party and you're gonna have two bigs guarding two bigs. The whole point of doing pick and rolls a lot of times is to get the mismatches. But what I have seen is they've had a focused effort that, when Cousins smashes into the paint off of a pick and roll, the guard who has the ball has the option then of getting it to Cousins, or Davis is the first wing player. Usually there's a shooter there. Usually you want your best shooter right there because he's going to get a quick shot. You want to have him firing really fast. Instead, it flies out to Davis because usually that guy's guy is the crash man, the one who comes down and then has to run back out to recover when the ball comes out. And that guy comes running back out to Davis, and it's usually a big who is absolutely uncomfortable with this. I have to run out to the three-point line. This sucks. And if Davis sees them coming at a high speed, he fakes and then just drives right into them and almost gets a foul every single time. And when he doesn't, he usually makes it right to the basket and scores. So there, he is now like – and because it only takes him 2 steps to get from the three-point line to where he can take a good shot or a layup, it's just a really deadly off-ball attack that I'm really appreciating and loving whenever that goes off the way that we expect it to. Now, I mean, the obvious thing to do there is to have your guy who's supposed to crash down, have a different guy crash down and have that guy stay out a little bit on Davis, or just tell him, don't close as hard and let Davis take the three. So smart teams will sniff it out and make it less effective, but it's not going to work every time, and there's going to be a bunch of times in these games where you're going to see it work because, again, the bigs who are guarding Davis are usually not comfortable doing those sorts of things. So it'll be fun to watch. They also do tend to really wreck on the glass. Like, I know it doesn't feel like they're just dominating the glass, but over and over again, you just see one of them just completely take out the other team's best rebounder and the other guy getting the ball uncontested, no one around. And last year, how many times can you remember Davis just getting mugged the crap out of him when he was under the basket trying to get a rebound? He's always had two or three guys he's fighting with, and everybody else was saying, hey, look, there's something happening over there. So that I feel like that is having a pretty significant impact as well.
So let me ask you something else then. I mean, I think it seems like the staggering, at least if you look on NBA Twitter, to stagger or not to stagger is not even a question. Every smart NBA person will tell you that you stagger and you have a superstar on the court all 48 minutes. But let's say if you do that, then AD and Cousins are only playing, let's say, 20 minutes together. What do you think about them playing 24 or 26 together and then 4 to 6 minutes for an entire game, neither is on the floor? Is there any argument to be made that that could actually help them more over the course of 48 minutes, or is it open and shut, you stagger, so one of those guys is on the floor all 48 minutes of the game no matter what?
No, I think you stagger no matter what. Because I don't think that – so how many times have we seen our teams, even like when Chris Paul was here, just give up these – just and they don't seem like they're that awful because when you think about it, it's like maybe six possessions. But they'll just give up these 8-0 or 10-2 or 12-2 runs and give up everything good they've done up to that point or just let the other team get away from it. And you just feel like if one of these two guys on the court – it'll still happen somewhat, but they should limit that from happening every game. And when they're on the court together, they're not perfectly synergistic. So they are helping each other, but they're not like it's not like suddenly when the two of them are on the court, you're going to be scoring 1.3 points per game instead of 1 point or point per possession. Not per game. That'd be pretty bad. Boosting it incrementally, and I think that it's better just to ensure, give yourself the insurance all game long. What do you think? Which way would you go?
So, I think that makes sense. Here's my argument: is that we saw in the OKC game, Jrue Holiday came out in that third quarter after he had been miserable in the first half, and they didn't have AD or Cousins on the floor, and Jrue just went off. And he carried that team for the whole first half. I think he scored like 11 of the first 13 points or something like that. So what if for just 4 to 6 minutes a game, let's say the last 4 minutes of the third quarter, you just went or no, let's say the first 4 minutes of either the second quarter or the fourth quarter when the other team usually have reserves. You just had Jrue and then four other nice guys, but not AD or Cousins, and Jrue just got to be uber aggressive at that point, and you ran everything through him, and that's when he really had his chance to shine, and maybe you break even, maybe a couple of games you score a little more than they do or whatever, but then that buys you more minutes for AD and Cousins, and then it lets Jrue have those little stretches where he could get his confidence going or he could be ultra aggressive. That would be the one thing I would think about trying, and it worked pretty well in the OKC game for a stretch.
It's true. Jrue is still a complete enigma to me. I can't figure out what games he's going to feel like he should just destroy people in. Like, there are games where I'm like, oh, he should be able to wreck that guy. That guy's guarding him. He should just be able to torch him. And he's a non-entity. And there's some games where I'm like, well, he's gone up against a pretty solid defensive player, and they've got a nice wing that can cover him, and he shouldn't be able to do much, and suddenly he'll have, like, 28 points. I can't figure him out. Does he confuse you as much as he confuses me?
I think he confuses himself. I don't think he knows what he's doing from moment to moment. But a specific role like that where we're like, all right, Drew, first quarter, you get AD or Cousins going. We'll play through them. We'll get the defense, you know, kind of squishing in as they focus on those two guys. And then we'll pull you out with a couple minutes left in the first. We'll continue playing through AD, yada, yada. Then in the second quarter, neither of the big guys will be on the court. Those 3 to 4 minutes, you come in like he did basically when he was a reserve, the 2 years ago. And you play like Jamal Crawford, but better. And you just go crazy and you're super aggressive for those 3 or 4 minutes. And then we'll put one of the bigs back and you kind of play in the middle and, you know, whatever. I just think if you gave him like a specific role like that and just let him kind of go crazy for a couple of minutes a game, and then that would buy you a couple of minutes extra per game where you could have 80 and Cousins on the floor. And yeah, it might not be perfect yet, but you describe some things where they indirectly help each other. And if and when those two do start playing well together, I want them as on the court together as many minutes as possible. So it would be something I would at least think about and I would try. And I think you could get away with it at the beginning of the second or the fourth quarter when pretty much every team, is playing reserves or mostly reserves. And you just have Holiday out there just freaking being ultra aggressive.
Did you feel bad for Markkanen tonight?
Eventually, yeah, but what frustrated me more was there was quite a few possessions for a while there where Boogie had Markkanen on him, and for some reason he thought the best idea was to play around at the three-point line or try to drive through the defense. So I was more like, yeah, I think Markkanen's night could have been a lot worse. Because to me, if I'm Boogie, every single possession, a 7-foot stick figure rookie with slow feet is on me. I'm in the post, and Boogie waited a while to do it. But then, yeah, once he did. But, I mean, it's not even the points that he scored. It's, you know, as he was trying to get position and post up, there would be a foul. And all things like that in a game that really actually mattered coming down to the end, like that gets you into the penalty with 7 or 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I think Boogie is still going to frustrate me this year. As talented as he is, as great as he is, like there should be zero possessions when he's covered by a guy like Markkanen in which he's at the three-point line playing around, crossover, dribbling, yada, yada, yada. So that was more of my focus than feeling bad for Lauri.
Yeah. I will say that I think Anthony Davis actually inspired Boogie to do that a little bit. Because at one point, you know, 4 minutes left in the – or 4 minutes used in the fourth, so 8 minutes left in the fourth. Boogie had been doing the same – like exactly what you're saying. He wasn't really abusing poor Lauri. And Davis got the ball on the wing, and they came over to, like, do some stuff. And he waved everybody away, and he turned and faced up in Markkanen and just took him to the rim. And then he did it again. And then suddenly Boogie was doing it. And I kind of feel like Boogie's like, well, anything you can do, I can do better. So he had to do it too. And it was kind of – I started feeling bad for poor Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should have happened to him more though. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. Who do you think – okay, so let's take away how they play right now. Just as far as a skill set as an offensive weapon – who do you think is the more talented – talented's not the right word, but, like, who has more tools in the toolbox just overall between Cousins and AD that you think you could really exploit if you were just starting an offense from scratch?
Cousins. Hands down. No question.
And why is that? Like, what thing
– because Cousins actually has a he's got a better long range shot. He's got a better dribble. He's got more instinctive passing. Davis is without any question a superior finisher. He can catch the ball and with a one or two dribble move, he will shoot at a much higher percentage from a lot of different angles than Boogie because of his athleticism, his ability to rise, and his touch. But if you need to create something, Boogie all the way.
Yeah, I think Boogie dribbles better, but I think AD's dribble, if I'm a defensive player, is more terrifying because, and you've said it before, he could take two long glides and he's at the rim. And I think that's why he gets so many foul calls. I mean, the majority of his, not the majority, a large portion of his fouls that he draws, I would bet, is when he's attacking the rim off the dribble. And that's because he has the guy on his hip or behind him where Cousins' actual handle is better, but because his speed isn't elite, he's not actually going to get a lot of foul calls when he's going to the rim. Defenders have more time to step over and clog up the lane. I think AD is more dangerous when it comes to, actually being able to use his dribble, even though Cousins is a better dribbler, if that makes sense.
I guess – I don't know if I 100% agree with that, but I do believe that that Anthony Davis, and when he's doing a limited thing, like this is one thing you'll never see Davis do is get the ball, survey, make a move, and find the exact right person if he's making a move to score. Once he decides, I am going to try to finish and score here, the ball is in his hands and it's going to the basket. And I think that Boogie, in a lot of situations, can make a move, attack, survey, and then make a move. And yeah, he's going to get blocked way more often than Davis is because, like you said, he can't get past the guy. He can't elevate him quite as well. But I think he's got more of an ability to start an offense than Davis does.
I mean, well, then how do you explain how Davis got 20-something free throws today and Boogie got, what did he get, 4-6, something like that?
Yeah, because Davis was attacking off of other people. Almost every single one of his free throws, he was catching the ball and making an aggressive move.
Yeah.
And usually they were trying to desperately catch the long-legged freak who was moving so fast that they couldn't even get in front of him and they had to plow through him. So, and
yeah,
that's partly working off of Cousins too. So,
yeah. See, to me, I agree that Cousins has the supreme skill set. I just don't think he uses them in the right times. Like every time he was singled up with Felicio or Robin Lopez, totally agree. Start on the perimeter, take him off the dribble, and then when help comes, kick out to somebody. It doesn't feel to me like he sizes up or understands the situation and then does the right thing to do off of that. It feels like he just does what he, whatever he's in the mood to do at that moment, that's what he's going to do. And the situation or the guy who's covering him or all those things don't really factor in. And I think that's what frustrates me is, I would think that a smart player would assess the situation from moment to moment, and he just kind of does whatever he feels like doing, irregardless of that. So, but yeah, watching the game, when I watch the two players, I go, okay, admittedly, Cousins is a much more skilled person with more tools in his toolbox. I just don't feel like he uses them the right way. So I think almost every year, Anthony Davis is going to end up being the better weapon or more efficient.
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet you that this year DeMarcus Cousins will get more shots than AD, and AD will be significantly more efficient. Just, I don't even think it's a question. I would fully expect, like, Cousins would probably get, like, 25 points per game on 20 shots, and AD will get the same 19, 20 shots and be closer to 30 points per game.
And
I'm really excited to see Davis' season. Of all the people in the league, I can think of fewer all-star, all-NBA caliber players who could benefit more from having having an all-star teammate who can take some, just a little bit of focus off him so he can just attack and destroy people one-on-one or when they're scrambling. Like, Davis is just, he's going to be a monster if he gets that regularly.
What do you think AD shoots from three this year?
32%.
And how many should he be taking a game?
1.5. Like, I think he should, if it's wide open and they're just not respecting him at all, and if he dribbles because they're back so far, it's not going to really give you an advantage, I think you should think about taking that or passing it on to the next guy. That's the only time he should be taking a three. If you ever see him, you know, catch an early transition and there's a guy on him and he's taking a three, that's a bad shot. If they're running a pick and pop for him and he's flaring out to the three-pointer to take a shot, I think it's a bad shot. He's not that guy yet. I'm not sure if he'll ever be. But, you know, if it's a kind of a broken possession and he's wide open and it's a catch and shoot and he's not going to get an advantage moving to the basket because the guy's already close to the basket, go ahead and let fly. How many do you want him taking?
I don't know. I mean, it seemed like the coaching staff was really feeling like his percentage was going to go up fairly significant this year, probably to at least the 35% range. And there's also a lot of this rhetoric about less long twos, more threes. And we know that AD took a bunch of long twos these last couple of years. So it would seem to me that if they think he could shoot around 35%, he should, you know, they'd probably want him taking similar to what the Brook Lopez or even the Marc Gasols of the world take. You know, I wouldn't be, if he could shoot 35%, you're probably going to see him take 4 to 5 per game. I mean, a 35% 3-point shooter is a 52%, you know, effective field goal percentage, and he ain't shooting 52% from 18 feet. So I think it'll be closer to 4 or 5, honestly. I think they want to get him similar to like what Brook Lopez or Marc Gasol did last year.
Yeah, but what would you want him to do?
I would want him to play a lot like he played tonight, minus some of those fadeaway long jumpers. So tonight he went 1 for 1, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And again, that was kind of a broken kick out, and he looked and he faked, and the guy just stared at him. And he's like, well, screw you then.
And it was after he had made like 6 straight free throws, so he had the rhythm. It was right. It was basically right in the middle of the court, so you know, lined up the same in the free throw line, which he had just visited 3 straight times in like the last 4 possessions. So he was kind of in a rhythm. It was just a couple more feet back.
By the way, I need to tell you this. 45 free throw attempts in 3 games.
In how many minutes?
Total 94.
So?
A free throw every 2 minutes.
So over the course of a game, I mean, like an average game, he would get 18.
That's the funny part, because you look at this and you're like, well, he had 2 big free throw games, but then he had 1 game where he only got 9, which, by the way, any season before Anthony Davis, who had a player who got 9 in a game, that would have been like stellar. It would have been amazing. Chris Paul, when we had a good team, was our leader with like 5. So he only got 9, but he only played 17 minutes. So he was on pace for 18 in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, free throws, obviously getting your opponent into foul trouble. Like, if you're playing Golden State and he's going to the line that much, it's probably because Draymond's fouling him and Draymond's in foul trouble, you know, helping your team get in the bonus so other people benefit. Like today, you know, he had some situations where there's nothing better on offense than being in the bonus, getting a defensive rebound and then getting fouled 94 feet away from the basket and go getting two easy points. So it just has so many benefits if he could continue to do that. But honestly, Cousins should as well, and they should equally be helping the team getting to the bonus, you know, early in quarters. The other guy I want to talk about has been a little strange. He played in the first two preseason games, didn't see any minutes tonight. Had a very good 19 games last year. Talked in the off season about him being about himself as being a possible sixth man of the year candidate. But so far, Jordan Crawford's played 28 minutes in the preseason. He's 3 for 12 from the field, 0 for 6 from three. I mean, do you think it's just something where they're getting other guys' minutes? Do you think he's struggling? Do you think they're seriously considering not having him on the team to start the season? Like, what would you guess is going on with Jordan Crawford?
So let me just flip a question on you a little bit about Jordan Crawford. Can you remember any point in these preseason games where they were basically like, our lineup is defensive, but we have one guy out there just trying to get all the buckets for us?
I mean, the third quarter against OKC,
With Drew. Right. So Crawford last year, when he had those moments, sometimes Cousins was on the floor, but not always. It was really the team was just like, all right, we just need someone to carry us. You have a green light. And he was drilling his shots, and there were big shots, and he was playing off of people a little bit. Mostly he was just, you know, dribbling into space and taking a shot. And I don't know if this team even wants to do that anymore. I would be legitimately surprised if Chris Finch, in his schemes for the offense, ever thinks that it's a good idea to be like, hey, guard, you have the ball in your hands, go just get us some buckets. I kind of don't think there's that role available for him right now the way this offense is going. But I'll also say, they're probably trying out the offense more in this preseason, because when you have a team, you want to be building those habits. You want to see how people are reacting, if they're doing the right things. And if Jordan Crawford's his actual play is, hey, I'm not going to be in the offense, I'm going to just find the first open spot I can and jack, that guy's not going to – you already know that. So why worry about what he's going to do? Just play the other guys. See if the other guys, if Terry Jones could do something, if Jalen Jones, it sounded wrong when I said it. Jalen Jones could do something, that kind of thing.
Cliff Alexander, don't leave him out.
He got 2 minutes tonight.
Yeah, big baller.
Two more minutes than Crawford.
Had a nice dunk in the open scrimmage, so that'll be his claim to fame. Yeah, I find it interesting because, I mean, yeah, he jacked a lot of shots, but last year, if I'm thinking, I'm sure if we put together like a highlight reel of AD's best lobs or dunks last year, I would bet that more of those passes came from Jordan Crawford, at least per minute, than anybody else. I mean, he got into the teeth of the defense. He got AD the ball. Like, I remember just, it seemed like it was so hard for people to get AD the ball in good spots or for easy buckets. And then all of a sudden Jordan Crawford comes in and it seems like AD's catching a couple of lobs a game out of nowhere when he hadn't done it all season. So I do think that that's another aspect of him that nobody else. I mean, Etuan Moore cannot put his head down and get into the teeth of the defense and collapse the defense. Either can Ian Clark. Drew Holiday does it in a very slow way and almost uses more strength and quickness. Like, there's nobody else on this team that could do that, and he can. So I don't know. To me, it seems like a skill set that is needed, and even now more than ever with Rondo out. So I'm just curious if they've given up on him, or like you said, they already know what they got, so they're working on system and some other new guys, and they're just going to deploy Crawford when the season comes. Which one would you bet on being the case? Memphis. So Memphis is in how many days now? 9 days? How many minutes does Jordan Crawford get against Memphis?
12.
So he's in the rotation. He's playing. Okay.
Yeah, I believe he's going to play. I think of all the people, though, he probably has the shortest leash of the people who I think will be in the rotation to start. I think he's one of those guys who they'll be, if he misses his first four shots, they're just going to yank him and put somebody else in. And if that happens for several games, he's done, probably for a month. Although, you know, granted, we have injuries, of course, so we'll probably settle into the same pattern that we've had when it was Monty Williams, when it was Byron Scott, when it has been Alvin Gentry. A guy will be given his 10 games, and at the end of 10 games, if he's not played well, they try somebody else, and you don't see that guy again for a month. And when that next guy has, you know, not played very well, then maybe your guy will get a shot again. And I think I should expect to see that with Crawford, unless he's actually having decent games. So.
Okay. And then the last thing I really had to hit on was the big man rotation right now. I mean, they played Perry Jones a little bit in this game, Ajinsa a little bit in the OKC game. Diallo, they're just being really safe and comfortable with. Do you feel how many minutes are going to bigs not named Boogie and AD, and I guess you could count Dante or whatever, how many minutes are going to those guys, and who's playing and how much when the regular season starts?
I fully expect right now that they're going to be playing Dante at four a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like they're going to give the rest of the minutes to Miller. And if Diallo was around, I think they would actually give Diallo minutes. I think they were fine with what he was doing out there. So I think that either of them would have gotten the same amount of minutes. But I am a little appalled at the idea that Miller and Cunningham are our power forwards for long stretches of our games. Because I should also point out that our good friend Darius Miller also has 59 minutes worth of game time this preseason and has also managed 3 total rebounds. 3.
Mm.
So between them, Dante and Darius Miller have played 120 minutes. They have played almost 3 full games and they have managed to grab 6 rebounds.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, you would think even with all the three-pointers in this league, like in all the long rebound possibilities, you would stumble into a couple.
Right.
It's just, it's kind of remarkable.
It's Eric Gordon level. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. What have you thought about Miller? I mean, are you bothered by a flat shot if it goes in? What have been your overall thoughts of Darius?
So, all I care about for a shot is whether it goes in and whether or not it is quick. And that is my biggest knock on Cunningham. If you watched tonight, if you went but could go back and rewatch it, you would see Cunningham get a swing pass, and his load up is so slow. But Miller's is actually fairly quick, and he doesn't leap that high. But he doesn't have to wind up, get his legs into it, and do a Cunningham style shot. So as long as it's going in at a decent rate, and to me, 35% or better, I'm fine. I'd like better, but 35% or better is right where I want it to be. Miller's a way better option for me than Cunningham at this point, just because he gets it off so much faster.
Okay.
And tonight, he even got it off with a hand in his face a couple times.
I like that he's being more aggressive. He's taking the shot. I wonder with this team, like, when the really good teams scout the Pelicans, they're going to say, just close out hard. Miller's not going to drive by you and do anything. Either is Moore, either is Clark. Like, if AD or Boogie swings the ball to an open shooter, run at them full speed, close out hard, make them put it on the deck because they're not going to be able to do anything. And I just wonder what's going to happen, you know, on those possessions when that becomes the regular way that they're defended by other teams. So,
yeah, what I think is funny about that statement is generally most teams, they want to swing the ball and they want their wings, most of their wings are capable of catching and either shooting or if a car, there's a hard closeout, driving in, maybe not all the way to the rim, but get into the near the paint and find somebody else open. If I told you that you could have a scenario where the ball swings to any of these five guys on our team, who would you pick? So the ball swings to Darius Miller, and there's a hard closeout. So hard closeout in all of these. Darius Miller, Tony Allen, our good friend Dante Cunningham, Anthony Davis, or Ian Clark. Who would you rather be receiving that ball and doing something with a hard closeout?
Oh, I mean, Anthony Davis, and that's just crazy.
It's crazy. Because it's two dribbles and he's got a foul or a dunk.
I mean, I'm trying to think who would be number two. Like, it would have to be, oh, my God, I don't know. Because, like, even if Clark or Moore get into the teeth of defense, they're so small that they're not going to be able to see the opening and kick across court. They don't have the passing skills. So, like, I don't even know who the second one would be, honestly. Yeah, it's not great.
It'd be so nice if we had a wing. If I put Solomon Hill on that list, would it matter?
No. No, I would have to at minimum get somebody like,
Jordan Crawford? That's the best name I've come up with other than David.
Yeah, he would be the best guy. I mean, because like I said, he'll get in and he at least scares the defense. And like I said, he finds AD. Now, you know, he's smart enough to know where if he was going to stick with the Pelicans last year, he had to get the ball to AD. So maybe that was part of it. But yeah, he would probably be the guy that if you told me they closed out hard, who would I want the ball in his hand driving into the defense to try to create something? He would actually be the guy on this roster. So yeah, it'll be interesting even coming off of like dribble handoff. So like other than Drew, let's say, you know, Boogie got the ball in the close to the 3-point line, gave the ball to somebody on a dribble handoff. And now that guy had half step on a defender. Who would be the guy that you would want to be that guy that you would have confidence would either be able to finish or get somebody else an open look? If I eliminate Drew, who's next on that list?
Clark.
And you think Clark could either get all the way to the hole or shoot a nice little mid-range shot or find an open man?
I think he has a better chance of it than anybody else I can think of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
kind of depressing. Like, how did we get back on this conversation? Let's get away from it.
Yeah, I mean, but all that said, like, this team.
Binu Udra would be great at that.
He would. I mean, this team with Rondo put up 46 points in the first quarter of the first preseason game they played this year. It's hard for me to imagine that Rondo is that important, but who knows? Maybe he is. But I think if you get these two big guys rolling, it opens up a lot. And most teams aren't that smart, and they're not going to, you know, play the person. They're going to play, you know, how they normally would run at a guy or close out on a guy. And then, you know, this could be a team that once they get going could get hot. My thing is that I feel like, at least what I've seen of Ian Clark, like he's at his best in transition. And I just don't know how much this team is going to get in transition moving forward. So, we'll see, but it's looking more and more like even today after the game, AD said 4 to 6 weeks for Rondo and then he'll be back and in the rotation. I just, I don't know how seamlessly they can make that transition. If they play bad over these 4-6 weeks, the way the Western Conference is, the season might already be over. If they play well over those 4 or 6 weeks, then they're going to have to totally redo, you know, how they're doing things. I hate when a guy gets injured before the season starts, because it's just so hard to reincorporate them, especially if they've never played a single game with any of these guys.
Yeah. So we got one more preseason game left with Memphis, and then we open the season with Memphis.
Yeah, so Gentry's already said he's really not playing anybody. He's not going to show Memphis anything. So that game's just going to be basically a walkthrough and a bunch of the scrubs. So we've essentially already seen the Pelicans' entire preseason.
All right. So any predictions as to who the finishing five sans Rondo will be based on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think it's what they finished the game with today, and it looked good. It would probably have some troubles against some elite wings, but they went with Drew, Moore, Clark, AD, and Boogie. And, I mean, that's five guys who, for their position, are at least adequate shooters who give you some spacing. You have enough ball handling and playmaking. You know, like I say, it's just a size thing where Drew could cover one guy, but if you have two teams with two, you know, pretty good perimeter scores, I guess, you know, if one of them's a point guard, then either Clark or Moore could cover one of them. But if you have a team that has, which is pretty rare, but if you have a team that has a good scoring shooting guard, small forward combo, you know, they could really bully that. But I'm trying to think how many teams that are like, that might be Wiggins and Butler, KD and Clay, which is going to give everybody problems. How many other teams can you think of that really at the two and the three could give you some problems if Drew could only cover one of those guys?
Unless somebody in Boston,
you know,
is doing something, I can't think of anyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, Cleveland has, if LeBron's at the small forward, it doesn't really matter who's
shooting. Right. Yeah, you just put Drew on whoever. Well, I mean, he would get the color. I mean, you're talking about Wade and J.R. Smith and freaking Rose to start with. But, yeah, and then, yeah, LeBron, you're not going to be able to do anything against anyway. But, yeah.
I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, that would kind of be your finishing.
Up,
and
up in Portland, it's a point guard and shooting guard combo. So
yeah. And Moore showed that he could help on the defensive boards. You got AD and you got Boogie, obviously. You can't really switch every, like, I don't think that's a super switchy defensive lineup. So I think the defense on that lineup could probably be average. You could end a lot of possessions with the rebound, so maybe slightly above average. But I think that is the best offensive lineup that this team could put out. So I think it would be that, unless you're going against like a LeBron or Kawhi, and then maybe Dante would be on the court for either Clark or Moore.
Yeah, maybe Miller.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so got anything else to talk about, or are you salivating for the season to start? Are you excited, or has this news dampened it for you?
I would have been more, I mean, infinitely more with Ron. I really think now it's the same thing where it's going to be these. I mean, so if Rondo's out, I want to see really quick if Rondo's out for 50, or let's say 4 weeks, how many games are we talking? So let's say that he comes back, let's just make it easy and say November, he comes back on November 8th. So let's just give it a solid month. What are we looking at as far as number of games? So in October, we'd be looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Let's say they just bring him back after the road trip. So his first game is November 11th at home against the Clippers. So he would miss 12 games. that's not the end of your season unless you pull another 2-10. So I would have been more excited, but they've got these, you know, essentially 12 games, hopefully no more than that, to get through with him. Give me 7-5, you know, and I'd be feeling pretty good if he comes back. So a little less excited, but, you know, at the end of the day, I still believe it's going to go with AD and Cousins, and they've shown me enough this preseason to get me excited at least their potential. You excited? You excited to perform the rap next Sunday?
I am, and I will have the rap ready next Sunday. I'm excited for the season to start. So this year, what happens every single year is I always buy NBA 2K about a month before the season starts because I'm just itching for some NBA basketball. And then the season starts, and I usually continue to play my player for like another week or two, and then I'm just have enough basketball I don't need to play anymore. So I actually held off this year, said I'm not going to do it. So I'm itching. I'm itching for NBA basketball.
Yeah, yeah, we shall see. I mean, I think they're fine now. One more injury, and I'm like, I don't want to jinx it, but AD or Cousins goes down, and the first couple of games of the season, I might just turn away forever. I can't do it again. It's already begun. This better be the last of the injuries. Otherwise, I'm just done.
All right, so you heard it here first. No more injuries or Mike is done.
And the rap is coming.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.